this is going to be show and tell. And I've already discovered a big disappointment. I thought that I had brought a sheet of papyrus with me, but evidently it's up in my office at home, so it's not here. But I have some things to show you from Israel that might be of interest to you. And I ask you, when was it, yesterday morning, to read Matthew 25, the story of that Jesus told about the 10 women, the 10 virgins. If you did that, I know that you did that. I have something to show you that will maybe help. At least it helped me, because I've always had a problem with those five women being so selfish not to share their oil. Well, we're going to begin today. Forrest will lead us in our opening prayer, and then Brother Gray will lead us in our closing prayer today. We're going to have a slide program of a trip that my wife and I took to Israel in 2011. Now, this is not a travelogue. It is, I think you're going to find some of the, I hope you'll find all the slides interesting, because they're going to visualize some things that you've read about in the Bible. And I believe that a person can live as a Christian and die and go to heaven and never go to Israel. But it's sort of like reading the Bible in Technicolor, when you are able to see and feel and smell and touch the places that you read about in Scripture. So, I hope you'll find that interesting. Let's begin then, and Forrest will lead us in a prayer, please. Now, I'm going to back up. I don't like to do this, but I'm going to back up because I want to be able to see some of the slides, since I don't have a monitor, and I don't remember the sequence of the slides, except for the first one. I do have that one down. All right. Proceed, sir. It's interesting that on March the 8th of 2011, we left to go to Israel. And if you ever have an opportunity to go, the early spring, I think, is the best time, because it is not quite so hot. We're going to start with, let's see, the ocean, the sea. The Mare Nostrum, our sea or our ocean, is the Mediterranean. And we're in the city, or what used to be the city of Caesarea. Now, that I've got to find my cheat sheet, so just hold on for a minute. We're in the city of Caesarea. It's called Caesarea Maritima because there is another Caesarea. What might it be? Caesarea Philippi. So we're in Caesarea Maritima on the seacoast, and can you think of anybody that you know from the Scripture who is associated with Caesarea? I can think of two people right off. How about Cornelius? Cornelius was a Roman centurion. And he was in Caesarea, and he is the first Gentile convert that we read about in the New Testament. Can you think of anybody else associated with Caesarea? And prison. Paul. He was in prison there for a good 2 years. Caesarea. Caesarea has a very interesting history. It is an artificial harbor, or was an artificial harbor, that was constructed by Herod the Great. You know who Herod the Great is? Who is he? Who do you associate him with? Birth of Jesus. He was the King Herod that you read about in Matthew chapter 2. He's the one that the Magi came to, and where is he who is born King of the Jews? Well, Herod was a great builder. And you'll see a lot of pictures that will have some buildings or some artifacts which are directly related to King Herod. Herod constructed this artificial harbor from an old military town that was called Strato's Tower. He constructed this harbor in about 20 years' time. The harbor at one time, and these are the ruins of the harbor. You can see in the far background some pillars or some buildings that are constructed, look like they're out in the ocean. Well, that was a part of the harbor. And what Herod did was to make some barges, and he filled them up with rubble, and then he used a Roman invention that is called hydraulic cement, and he cemented all of that stuff together, and then he sank them, and that served as the foundation of the walls of the harbor. There were many, many fabulous buildings in Caesarea. There was a palace there. Now, where was the seat of the Roman government in the days, say, of the apostles? That is, the seat of the Roman government in Palestine. It was not Jerusalem. It's Caesarea. And I think that's one reason why Cornelius was in Caesarea, because that's where the military presence, or at least there was a military presence there, because that's where the Roman governor was going to live. Now, he would make periodic trips to Jerusalem, and you'll find that Pilate was in Jerusalem at the Passover when Jesus was crucified. But his official residence was in the city of Caesarea. Next slide. We're already at the next slide. Okay, every city has to have a reliable water system. Now, they didn't have any springs in Caesarea because it's on the seacoast. So they brought water in by aqueduct. Now, this particular aqueduct, and you can't really tell, but if you can look under the middle arch, there's some blue back there. That's the ocean. This is right along the ocean front. And this aqueduct is a double aqueduct. That is, it has two channels in it. Now, you can't see the second channel, but this particular channel probably dates from about the mid-first century. It was built by the Roman government, and it brought water to the city. This aqueduct probably was standing when Paul was imprisoned in Caesarea. On the other side of this aqueduct, that is on there's another channel, and this water comes from inland to a place that is called the Crocodile River. Now, would you ever associate crocodiles with Palestine? No, I wouldn't. But when Mark Twain went to Palestine in the 1800s, there were still crocodiles there. And the river, and it's called Nahal Tananim, that means Crocodile River. So there were all kinds of animals in the country of Palestine that I would never associate with the biblical people who lived in that part of the world. So this particular aqueduct runs about 6 to 8 miles, and there is an extension of another aqueduct, which I didn't have a picture of, that has a tunnel that's several kilometers long. So the Romans were very, very clever engineers, and they were able to do things that really made life in these old cities modern from their perspective. Next slide, please. Now, this is part of our group, and you can see how large that arch is. Now, what if you had to build something like that with very crude tools? It'd probably take us a good while. The legions are the ones who built many of these aqueducts, as well as a theater that we're going to see. But you can see that this particular theater will seat between 8,000 and 10,000 people. And this theater, or at least this is the reconstruction of a theater that King Herod built. Now, a theater, we usually think of a theater being like a movie house, a movie theater. Well, of course, they had nothing like that. But these theaters, there would be plays and all sorts of things that would take place. That's one thing that was done in the Colosseum in Rome. So this city is a model of Herod's engineering and building abilities. Now, this young man that's standing looking into the camera is part of our group. He preaches in Ohio, and I'll have to be very apologetic. I don't remember what his name is Kevin, but I don't remember his last name. It's not right. Next slide, please. Now, this is a replica of a stone that was found while reconstructing that theater we just saw. Can you make out a name that might be familiar to you? Look very closely. It's in the second line. Pilatus, Pilate. Pilate is described as the procurator, Tiberium Pilatus. That is, he is the Roman governor. And this stone was uncovered in this century, the previous century, which makes it really kind of interesting because this is an archaeological indicator that there really was a man by the name of Pilate. He really did live in the city of Caesarea. And guess what? You can read about him in the New Testament. Now listen, I don't believe the New Testament simply because somebody discovered a stone that has the name of a man on here. But it helps to build our confidence to be able to see that, well, you know, these men didn't just make up this book we're reading. These are actual people. They are not literary creations. They're actual people who lived and they died, and we know part of their history. Pilate. Next slide, please. These are some of the ruins of Caesarea, and you can see I use the word ruins very literally because much of this still lies in ruins. Now, not everything that you see dates from the time of Jesus, but much of it does. Caesarea has a very long and interesting history. It is not occupied now, but at one time, long after Jesus had died and was resurrected and ascended, Caesarea continued to thrive. The Turks eventually came, and they took over this particular city, and they built some walls around it. And I think I've got some pictures of walls which date from the occupation of the Muslims, I think in the 9th century A.D. Next slide, please. Now then, this body of water is going to be just about due east of Caesarea. It's a fairly large body of water. It is fresh water. Do you know where this is? We call it a sea. Pardon me? No, fresh water. Fresh, it's the Sea of Galilee, that's right. The Sea of Galilee is approximately 12 miles long, running north to south, and it is about a little over 6 miles wide at its widest point. The Sea of Galilee is supplied by the Jordan River with water. We're going to see a place, we're going to see the source of the Jordan River in a slide. The Sea of Galilee was a very important place because, number one, many of the disciples of Jesus were centered there because of their occupation, which was fishing. So much of the food supply will be found, at least the marine food supply will be found in the Sea of Galilee. Now, you'll never guess what the most common fish in the Sea of Galilee was during the days of Jesus. Would anybody like to take a guess? You can buy this fish today in your supermarket. Tilapia. I would have never thought. I thought tilapia was some kind of exotic, far eastern. No, it's not. Tilapia are native to the Sea of Galilee. And when I get to the slide of Jericho, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I ate there. This is Banias. Originally Panias, but in the New Testament text, it is Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea Philippi. Again, the King James in Matthew 16 will talk about the coast of Caesarea Philippi. I've not yet figured out exactly why the translators use the word coast, because there's not a sea there. But this is a very interesting place. In the first place, there is water. This is one of the sources of the Jordan River. And if you look way back in the background, can you see a cave up there? Well, there are several caves. At one time, some of this water came out of that cave, but because of earthquakes and other geological problems, it no longer does that. But this place originally was called Panias. Now, can you look at that word and dissect it a little bit and maybe come away with a reason it's called Panias? First three letters, P-A-N. Capitalize the P. Pan. The god Pan. Little g on God. The god Pan. Pan, let's see, a pantheist. What is a pantheist? Sir? Yes, but God is all and all is God. Everything is God. Well, there were many gods worshipped in this area, but Pan was one of them. Now, the reason it's called Banias today is because the P was corrupted, and it now is a B. It's Banias. If you find a modern map of Israel today, you'll find this place named Banias. This is where Jesus went. At least Matthew records it this way, that he went with his 12, and it would be here that Peter would confess, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." I never thought it would look like this. I thought it would be someplace way out in the desert, kind of barren looking, but it's not. This is up in northern Galilee. In fact, it's way up to the north, and it is a place that is very green. You'll notice that there are green bushes and green trees, and I thought, man, this isn't anything like I thought Israel was going to look like. But my bubble is going to be burst before very long, because the south is not anything like this at all. So if you were looking on a map, can you find Caesarea Philippi? Caesarea Philippi is what is northeast of the Sea of Galilee. And if you were to, in fact, it's almost north of the Sea of Galilee. If you find there are some fingers of water, little rivers that come from up in that area and feed into the Sea of Galilee. Well, this area is going to be east of there. So we're way up to the north. Now, I thought that I might have the time this morning to show some Old Testament slides. Basically, we're looking just at New Testament slides today. But what is the northernmost tribe in Israel? What was the name of the northernmost tribe? Dan. There was a city by the name of Dan. And it was a proverbial statement that the territory of Israel stretched from Dan to Beersheba. So Dan is going to be way up to the north, and Beersheba is, guess, way down to the south. So we're up in the northern regions, up in the northern part. Now, this is taken from what some people think is the Mount of Beatitudes. Now, the Mount of Beatitudes, what body of water would that be in the background? It's not the Jordan River. It's the Sea of Galilee. This is the southern end of the Sea of Galilee, and the Jordan River will flow out of the Sea of Galilee and flow to the south. When I say it is purported to be the Mount of Beatitudes, nobody really knows where the mount was that Jesus delivered what Matthew records in Matthew 5, 6, and 7. But you can see this would be quite an inspiring place because it is, first of all, it's not a real high mountain, but it's a place where a number of people could gather and Jesus could speak to them. And looking back into the background, way back to the back, you would no longer be in Israel if you were on that ridge up in the background. You would be in Jordan, the country of Jordan. But in the days of Jesus, or at least even before then, it would be like Moab. The Moabites would come from that area. Next slide, please. Now, we took a little boat ride. We got out into the Sea of Galilee on a little boat. And while we were on that little boat, and by the way, we had about 25 people in our party, and we were the only ones on the boat. And we decided that we'd sing a song out there. Guess what song we sang? Peace be still. You know, Master, the tempest is raging. The billows are tossing high. Peace be still. We did not a lot of singing, but we sang in some interesting places. And I don't think I'll ever forget singing Peace be still while out in that boat on the Sea of Galilee. Okay, next slide, please. Tell us, Sultan, old Jericho, what is your picture, what kind of mental picture do you have of Jericho? Well, I'll tell you what mine was. It was a large, well-built, walled city. Well, the first word was wrong. It's not that large. In fact, it just covers several acres, not several hundred acres. It was a walled city. And the ruins of Jericho can be seen, and I'll have to apologize for that girl that's got on the houndstooth hat and the roll tide. She obviously is a reprobate. Because my grandchildren don't wear that color. They wear orange and blue. If you don't know what that is, I'll talk to you later. But Jericho is still being rehabilitated. That is, there are still archaeologists who are working to reconstruct perhaps the walls of Jericho. Now, let's see. What was the first city that the Israelites took when they entered the land? Jericho. Now, Jericho has sort of a travelogue identity. It is called the City of Palms. Jericho is about 800 feet below sea level. Now, you don't when you look at a map of Palestine, you'll find those two large bodies, actually three large bodies of water. You'll find the Mediterranean Sea in the west. Up to the north, you'll find the Sea of Galilee, and to the south, the Dead Sea. And this little rivulet of water called the Jordan River running down. But it looks kind of flat on a map. This is part of what is called the Rift Valley, the Great Rift Valley, which runs from Syria down through North Africa. The Dead Sea is the lowest habitable spot on the earth. It is approximately 1,200 feet below sea level. Now, it's kind of interesting because when you stand on the western shore of the Dead Sea, you're only about 30 to 35 miles away from the Mediterranean. And what if somehow or other there was a big earthquake and a crack opened up that stretched to the Mediterranean? Everybody would be underwater. Now, it is hot, very hot. It is arid. It's very dry. So these are some of what some archaeologists think are the original stones or bricks in the walls of Jericho. Now, if you were paying attention to the little quiz that was up on the screen before we started today, there was a question about something about the Israelites marching around the city of Jericho. You remember that point? Well, what happened to those walls? Did they just kind of evaporate? No, they fell down. They fell down flat. The Israelites conquered the city, and the only people who were saved from that city were Rahab and her family. So perhaps these are some of the original parts of the wall of the city of Jericho that date from the time. What was the man's name who led the army? Joshua. Okay, next slide, please. Now, we have come from Jericho. Guess where this place is? What city might this be? This is Jerusalem. Listen, what gives it away? The gold dome. Is that the temple? No. No, that's a Muslim building. It covers the Dome of the Rock, which purportedly has been built over the site of the ancient Temple of Solomon. Well, you can't imagine. Well, maybe you can. Coming from the north and looking to the south, and we would be looking from near the Mount of Olives, to be able to see the city, the walls around the city, the platform where the temple stood, it was exhilarating. It's just impossible to explain. And even though I have no longing for a return to the law of Moses, you can see why an Israelite would have such great sentiment for this city. Well, next slide, please. This is our fearless leader. This is Leon Malden, and he's riding on what I think must be one of the ugliest, stinkiest, nastiest animals that God made. But it's a very important animal. Can you think of anybody in the Old Testament who had a fleet of these animals? Job. Job had hundreds of camels. These were the 18-wheelers of the desert. They carried all sorts of stuff. Well, Leon Malden is one who got our group together, and he is the one who organized the tour. And Leon's a good gospel preacher. I did not ride on one of those stinky beasts because I'm too cheap. I didn't want to pay $10 just to have my picture taken with sitting on a camel. Unfortunately, this was on Sunday morning after we had met for a period of time as a group. My wife was sick that morning. Don't ever get sick in a foreign country. She had a very bad rash. And we finally had to call a doctor. The doctor came to the hotel. He spent about 10 minutes with my wife for $200 cash. He didn't take Visa. He gave her some ointment. I say gave. He didn't give her anything. He provided a prescription that she could go buy some ointment to put on her rash. But that's why she was not with us that day. So she did not get to ride the camel. She was very, very disappointed. Next slide, please. She still is not with us, and we're walking down the Kidron Valley. Now, this monument on the right is called Absalom's Monument. Now, Absalom did not build it, but it is a monument to Absalom. And as we're walking along that valley, and our guide is pointing out all these things, and you can see how much rubble and things are in this valley. We round the corner, it sort of curves to the left here, and all of a sudden there are a bunch of rocks that come hurtling out of the sky. And those rocks hit two of our ladies. One of them got hit right there. It just so happened it hit her on the glasses. She had on a pair of sunglasses. It broke her glasses, and it cut her nose. But one lady got hit here in the chest. What was happening? We were being stoned by some Palestinian youths. They were about 50 yards away from us, and you can tell they had no shortage of ammunition. I mean, there are rocks everywhere. Our guide had to call the police. The police came and fired tear gas. It dispersed the crowd, and the police had to escort us out of the valley. My wife missed a lot of stuff that morning. She got better by lunch. She joined us at lunch. And here she is. Now, she's pointing to this stone. And we're standing by the walls of the city. Now, these walls do not date from the time of Christ. These walls probably date from the days of the Crusaders, which would be the 10th, the 11th and 12th centuries. But they're pretty good-sized rocks, aren't they? Can you imagine? And they were hewn in that area. I mean, they were not transported from Italy. They were hewn in that area. And the wall of the city encompasses a good bit of territory. So I took her picture to show you the approximate size of the stones in the walls of the city. And again, you have to remember, they constructed these without the aid of cranes, bulldozers, and pneumatic hammers. Okay, next slide. Now, oddly enough, many of the ruins of the city of Jerusalem are below street level, because the city has been built layer upon layer upon layer. So many of the things that date from the time of the first century are below the level of the present-day streets. Do you see the stones in the center part, how they are grooved? The Romans made those grooves in the stones for the purpose of carrying water away from their buildings. They were clever engineers. Now, we have downspouts. They didn't have downspouts then, but they had those grooves that would carry the rainwater away from the buildings into a central collecting place to go into reservoirs. I think I've got some pictures maybe of some of the reservoirs. Next slide, please. Now, guess what this is? That's the tomb of Jesus. Did you know that? See that little gold lantern over there? Well, that indicates that's the tomb of Jesus. Obviously, I'm being facetious. But that is, those are tombs. Do they look like what you thought they'd look like? A graveyard, in my mind, you know, is a yard that is a place where you see tombstones and you can see monuments of burial. But if you look very carefully, if you look up toward the top, you can see that there's kind of an arch there. Well, that arch there is for a purpose. Do you know what the purpose is? That arch is where the round stone would go. There is a track that stone would be rolled, and when they roll the stone up against those openings, the tomb is sealed. This is carved or hewn out of solid rock. I don't know who was buried in those graves. But it's possible that Jesus was buried in a grave similar to this. And it's not what I thought. Now, this grave, which is not in the city of Jerusalem, I took this picture out on the highway. But you see that round stone in the left-hand part of the picture? Well, that stone can be rolled up against that opening. Do you remember when Lazarus was buried? What was one of the first things that Jesus told the people to do before Lazarus was raised? Roll the stone away. And when Jesus was buried, there was a stone that was rolled up against the opening and it was sealed. That doesn't mean it was caulked. What that means was that there were some strings that were put on that stone that ran from the stone to the wall, so that if the tomb were tampered with, the strings would be broken, and you could tell that the tomb had been robbed. Well, here is a very common grave or tomb, and that more than likely would date to approximately the time of Jesus. Next slide. Now this is a box. Actually, there are two boxes here. They're made out of stone. Do you know what they're called? They're called ossuaries. An ossuary? What in the world is an ossuary? Well, an ossuary is a box where bones are placed. Bones. Well, my mother and father are both dead, and their graves are side by side. And more than likely, their graves will never be disturbed unless there is a problem and their bodies must be exhumed. But it wasn't that way when you bury in Palestine. Generally, when a body is buried, it's going to be placed in one of those tombs that we saw pictures of. And it will lie there for about a year until all of the flesh desiccates and nothing is left but the bones. Then they gather the bones and they put them in an ossuary. Some of these ossuaries have names on them. And if you read the news a few years ago, there was an ossuary that had the name Caiaphas on it. Caiaphas? Who is he? He was the high priest during the days of Jesus. So these ossuaries, and they're very common. I mean, this one, I was walking down the sidewalk and just happened to look into a little indentation on the other side of the sidewalk, and there those boxes are. So these ossuaries are very common, and they were probably very common during the days of Jesus because that's where the bones would be placed after they had lain in the, which means that you can recycle the tomb. The tomb can be used, say, in a family plot. Instead of having six tombs for six family members, you could have one tomb. Okay. This is what some people call, what do you think that is? The picture really doesn't give you a good idea, but I've seen pictures of this and it looks like a skull. So if it is a skull and it is in what we would today call Jerusalem, what do you think that is? That's Golgotha. Now, whether it's really Golgotha or not, I don't think anybody can really say. Why was it called the place of the skull? Is it because the outcropping of the rock sort of looks like a skull, or is it the place of execution? I don't know. I don't know the answer for that. But this is what most people who live in Jerusalem would say. This is Golgotha. Why would that be important to you? Because that's the place of the execution of Jesus. That's where he was crucified. Okay, next slide, please. This is what's called the Wailing Wall. The Wailing Wall is all that is left of the city of Jerusalem as it existed in the days of Jesus. And to call it a wall is a little bit misleading because it is a retaining wall. And what that meant was that when Herod began working on the temple long before Jesus was ever born, you know, he reconstructed the temple. Well, in order to have more room for construction, Herod had to extend the temple platform. And so this is going to be the part of the platform that held up the fill that had to be put in there to extend the platform up top. So that's why this, but that's not why it's called the Wailing Wall. You maybe have an idea about why it's called the Wailing Wall because you see there are two men up there with their back to the camera. Now, if you pay careful attention, you'll see that there are no women in that picture. Women are not allowed there. They have their own special place near the Wailing Wall where they go, but it's segregated. I found that Jewish men, that at least the ones that I observed, do not have a very high opinion of women. My wife can testify to that because she was treated rather rudely. So, now then, let's see. I'll go back one slide. No, I'm sorry. Stay there. Now, this is yours truly on the left, but that's not yours truly on the right. I don't know who this gentleman is, but you'll see that he is dressed in black. It's not Johnny Cash. He is an Orthodox Jew. You notice he's got black socks, black shoes, black coat, black hat, maybe even his hair is black. I don't know. I tried to find out why do Orthodox Jews just wear black and they wear white shirts, but everything else is black. Well, I was told you don't ask those questions, so I didn't ask the question. But what do you think he's doing? Is he wailing? No, not really. He's praying. Now, you'll notice about the level of his head, there's a brown, kind of a brown lateral streak there. The rock is discolored. You know why it's discolored? Sir? Yes, but why would that discolor it? Because they leave the oil from their skin on that stone. Can you imagine how much oil it takes to discolor that long, long wall? I mean, it's everywhere. Now, you'll notice in the cracks, it looks like there's some litter. That's not litter. You know what that is? Prayers. They write their prayers, they fold the paper up, and they stick it in the wailing wall. I don't know how many prayers are there, but there must be lots and lots of them. Now, you'll notice the size of those stones. Those stones are approximately a little over 3 feet high and somewhere between 6 and 8 feet long. They weigh tons. They date from the days of King Herod. This is part of King Herod's work. And it's the only thing that remains of the city of Jerusalem that can be dated from that time, that at least that you can see. Now, you can go down below. We saw some stones that date from Roman times. But these are the only things left. And the reason why they're the only things left is because when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Roman army in AD 70, it was leveled. Every building was torn down. It was eventually rebuilt by the Romans. It was not called Jerusalem at that time, but it became a pagan city for a short while. But this is all that is left of the old city of Jerusalem. Next slide. Now, this is, if you'll notice on the left, it's kind of hard to see, but it looks like there's kind of a stone path to the left. This is the path that goes down through the Kidron Valley up to the Mount of Olives. Now, our guide tells us, and our guide is not a Christian, but our guide tells us this may be a path similar to the one that Jesus took when he left the Passover scene in the city of Jerusalem, went across the Kidron Valley to the Mount of Olives where he was arrested. So this, and you can see there are, this tree is kind of like an evergreen tree. It's not a cedar tree, but it's an evergreen tree. Whether this was the actual path that Jesus trod, nobody really knows. And there is so much tradition in the city of Jerusalem that nobody ever will know for sure. But it is a pathway similar to this that Jesus would take when he left the city and went to the Mount of Olives. Next slide. Now then, this looks like some plain old trees. They're not. They are fig trees, but it's a sycamore fig. Now, there is some fruit on that tree, but now let's see. There is an Old Testament prophet who is associated with figs. Can you recall who he is? Amos. Amos was a nipper of figs. And I'm told what has to be done is that the fig will have to actually be nipped at the end, the opening, so the fig can be fertilized and then it can produce fruit. So this is a sycamore fig that is in the city of Jerusalem. Next slide. Now, this is more like the cemetery that I am acquainted with. All of those little boxes and stones are graves outside the city. They're everywhere. I suspect that for what we would call a faithful Jew today, the idea of being buried on Israeli soil would be the ultimate desire. Pat and I went to Italy before we came back home from our stay in Europe, and we went to Pisa, and we saw a Jewish cemetery, which I thought, well, a Jewish cemetery is a Jewish cemetery. But do you know where the dirt came from in that Jewish cemetery? From Palestine. They hauled dirt from Palestine so that they could be buried in Jewish soil. Well, this is a cemetery that almost completely encircles, at least on the south part of the city, is all along that side of the city. Okay, now notice the palm tree. Did you see the palm tree? They're everywhere. Okay, next slide. Now, this is a replica of the old city of Jerusalem. It's at the Jewish Museum. It is outside. And, you know, you kind of get an idea this has to be a replica because you can barely make out in the background two people back up on the sidewalk. But can you imagine constructing something like this? My, the talent and the time it would take. But the building on the extreme right is going to be the backside of the temple platform. That's not the temple, but it's part of it. I think that would be the Fortress Antonia. And you can see that there is a living quarter on the left-hand side. Down toward the bottom on the foreground would be the old city of David. Now, the city of David and the city of Jerusalem are not the same thing. The city of David is just a small quarter of the city of Jerusalem. But look at the buildings. They kind of have looked like a half of a Colosseum in sort of the center background. Okay, next slide. Now, this is part of the wall. Do you have any idea what those plants are? They're not moss, but they are a plant that would be associated with sacrifice. The plant is hyssop. You remember reading about hyssop in the Old Testament? Hyssop grows. It's sort of like it's sort of like moss. It grows almost anything, but it grows particularly on these walls. And it is everywhere. So this is the Old Testament plant that we call hyssop. Now you'll notice in the center up at the top, there is a medallion. Now this medallion dates, I think, from the 5th century A.D. So the wall, I think about a wall, well, a wall is a wall is a wall, but it's not. Because there are all sorts of interesting things that you find on walls. Next slide. Guess where we are? Oh, little town of Bethlehem. We're in Bethlehem, and we're on Manger Street. Manger. Okay. That is a manger. Is that what you thought a manger would look like? It's not what I thought. I thought a manger would be made out of wood, you know, kind of like on stilts, and that's where the cattle feed. But usually mangers were made out of stone, and they are not uncommon. I found that picture out in the open someplace. I don't remember exactly where. But that's what a manger would look like. Now, whether that's the kind of manger that Jesus was laid in as a baby, I really don't know. But that would be the common idea of a manger. Next slide. We're walking toward, guess what? A cathedral, a church building. There are church buildings everywhere. Because what would happen is that there would be a church building built over some famous site to mark what happened on that site. So there are hundreds, well, maybe that's an overestimation, but there are many, many church buildings in the city of Jerusalem and in other cities in Israel. And this is one of them where Jesus was supposed to, where the Annunciation to Mary came, that you're going to have a child. Okay, next slide. Now, do you know what this is? It comes from the smallest of garden seeds. It's a what? Mustard. Okay, next slide. You will find the mustard seed tree only in Bethany. That sounds like it came out of a Wall Street advertising firm, doesn't it? Okay, let's see. Bethany. Who do you associate with Bethany? Okay, and their brother, Lazarus. Okay, let's go to Lazarus' tomb. Now, is this really Lazarus' tomb? I have no idea. But as we go down, we're going to see the tomb that is identified as Lazarus' tomb. Now, this is, you can see this is sort of the plan of the tomb, and it wasn't just like a little old, a slot in the, a hole in the wall, but these actually had rooms in them where the bodies would be laid, and there may or may not be a window in some of these. Next slide. Now, we've left the city of Jerusalem, and we're going south. Now, this place is not mentioned in the New Testament, but the name that this place is called is mentioned, Herod. Again, this is Herod the Great. And here is what Herod built. Next slide. That is an artificial mound. Can you imagine? Now, just imagine doing this with a wheelbarrow. How long it's going to take. Herod had this place built, and it's called Herodium, and although much of it is in ruins, up on top were four towers at each corner. And it's not far from the city of Jerusalem. And this is where Herod could come to sort of escape the plots and the plans inside the city of Jerusalem. And this is what it looks like up on top. Obviously, everything is in ruins. But just imagine having how many slaves or how many workers to carry all of these rocks to build this mound. And then on top of that mound, to construct several things. Now, it is thought, although it is not for certain, that Herod also chose this as his burial place. The tomb of Herod, at least when I got my information, the tomb of Herod had not been found. Next slide. Now then, we're going down toward the Dead Sea. And this area, let's see, next slide. Does this sort of look like what you thought it would look like? Barren, dry as a bone. Now, here is a body of water, and look how hazy it is. What is this body of water? This is the Dead Sea. We're looking to the east, so those hills in the background are in Jordan. But on this side is would be Israel, and we are about 1,200 feet below sea level. Next slide. This is my wife, and she is standing right by the Dead Sea. I thought it would just, I didn't think the water would look like that. I thought the water would be real murky, but it's very clear. Next slide. Now, you'll notice at the edges of the water, there's sort of a white residue. You know what that is? Salt. The Dead Sea is also called the Salt Sea. You know why it's called the Dead Sea? Well, what do you mean it's dead? It doesn't have an outlet. That's one thing. It's called the Dead Sea because the salinity is so great, there is no living creature in that sea. Nothing. No fish, no organisms, just salt. It has almost 35% salt. Okay, next slide. Oh, wouldn't you like to live there? These are the Badlands. I mean, they look like something that just is out of, look like the moon, not on Earth. Next slide. Now we're going to Masada. Have you ever heard of Masada? Now, Masada was not built, that is, it was not, it did not originate with Herod the Great, but he had a lot to do with it. Masada is sort of shaped like an aircraft carrier, and it's about 800 to 900 feet tall. And it's right on the edge of the Dead Sea. The reason why Masada is important is because after the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, about 900 plus Jewish people were ensconced on the top of Masada. And that's where they stayed. They were pretty well protected. There's no way up there. Well, obviously, there has to be a way up there, or they couldn't get up there. But it is defendable. When the Romans came in about 72 AD, they were going to have to take Masada and rout out those rebels. Now, you see the little trail up here? That's called the snake trail. That's the way you walk up to the top. Now, I and three other guys walked up to the top of Masada. The rest of the weenies took the lift, and that's how they got up there. But us real men, we walked up the snake trail. Now, do you see this little ridge over on the left? That's what the Romans built. It took them about 3 months to build this drive. And what they did was they built an assault machine, and they pulled that machine, a battering ram, as well as a ballast thrower. They pulled that up that drive, and they began to assault Masada. When they finally reached the top, they didn't find anybody. At least that's the story that Josephus tells. They made an agreement they would never be taken by the Romans. They selected 10 men, and those 10 men killed about 900 people. And then they began killing one another. When the Romans got to the top, they found 2 women and 5 children. They had hidden in a well. Those are the only survivors of Masada. When Masada fell, the Romans, I guess, mopped up whatever was left of any kind of opposition, and the Jewish nation practically ceased to exist at that point in time. Next slide. These are some of the ballistic balls that were thrown by that machine that the Romans made. How in the world do those people make those things without machinery? They did it all by hand. Next slide. This is from up top side. In the background, you can see the Dead Sea. Look how barren that place is. Who would want to live there? Next slide. These are some of the hills, and you can see there's a little bit of greenery. Not a whole lot, but a little bit of greenery. This is far to the south. We're going down toward Beersheba. Next slide. These are some of the small fields, and you can, if you recall in the Old Testament about do not remove the boundary stones, well, look at all the boundary stones that mark out the little plots. These are vineyards, by the way. Next slide. You know what this is? This is an olive press. There is a beam that fits through that little rounded rock. And you either have people or an animal that will roll that rock around and it crushes the olive. Now, there's a spout. I don't know exactly where the spout is. It's stopped up. But when the olives are pressed, the oil will separate and they catch the oil and then they just clean out the old dregs and they start all over again. Isn't that modern? Next slide. We're in the city of Capernaum. Let's see. What do you think this is? This is the ruin of a synagogue. This synagogue probably dates from the 3rd to 4th century AD. So this is not the synagogue that Jesus would go to. Next slide. However, notice the difference in the color of the stones in the foundation. There's black and then there's white. The black stones are basalt. That is, it was a volcanic stone. Now, the stone, the black stone, is thought to be the foundation of the original synagogue, which perhaps, and I'll underline perhaps, which perhaps was the synagogue that Jesus would meet in. You know, you can read where when Jesus began his ministry, he read a section of Scripture and he said, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." That was in the synagogue in Capernaum. Okay, next slide. Isn't that a mighty stream? That's we in the south, we call that a creek. That's the Jordan River. Did you think the Jordan River looked like that? Next slide. I thought this was amusing. Don't go down into the river. What did Jesus use the river for? What John used the river for? Baptize people in that river. Well, we actually saw some people being baptized in the Jordan River. I guess you get a certificate saying, I was baptized in the Jordan River. Is that, you think that makes their baptism more efficacious? Next slide. Now, you see out in the middle, this is the Dead Sea. You see that slick spot or that slick stream out in the middle? That's where the Jordan River flows into the Dead Sea. The water, the density of the water is so much different that you can almost trace the Jordan River until finally it will dissipate and the trace will no longer be there. But that is the extreme northern part of the sea, the Dead Sea, where the Jordan flows into it. Next slide. Sheep. Lots of sheep. Does that surprise you? The most famous king in Israel was a shepherd. Who was that? David. Okay. Now then, I think we're almost finished. Somebody shot a hole in that rock. That's a cave. We're near the Qumran community. And those caves are very significant because there were some scrolls found in those caves called the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were found about 1948, I think. And this is not one of the caves where the scrolls were found. But it would be a cave that would be very similar. Now, you may ask, how in the world did people get into a cave like that? Very carefully, I would say. Next slide. Again, this is the Dead Sea. Next. We're in the city of Jericho again, and you can see maybe why it would be called the City of Palms, because of the palm trees. Tell Dan. Well, I didn't think this was on here, but now we're way, way up to the north. This would be where the tribe of Dan would be living, and this is one of the sources of the Jordan River. Not what I thought it would be like. I mean, these waters probably come from some of the snow on top of Mount Hermon, which would be north and a little bit east of there. This is the door into the wall at Tel Dan. Oh, I know what we've done. We've gone all the way to the top. I don't think we want to go further because there are just way too many slides, and it's already past 11 o'clock, and I'm hungry. Okay, let's just stop the program there. Now, I have a couple of things. Turn to Matthew 25, and somebody read this story for me, please. Nobody wants to read today? Go ahead. Now, do those five virgins who would not share their oil, were they being selfish? That's a common idea. They're just being, I mean, don't they have a five-gallon bucket full of oil? Well, this is a lamp. This lamp dates, by the way, from the first century. It's made out of clay. And the fuel would be olive oil. There would be a wick that fits here, that I don't have a wick, but the wick would be lighted, and it would not give off much light, but it would give off enough light that you could see a little bit. Now, what would they carry the oil in? That's what they would carry the oil in, and it fits right on top of here. They would have some kind of a cork that could go in this where it would seal, and there would be just enough oil in here to fill the lamp. Now, that helps me to understand and see that they weren't being selfish, because if they had given to the others who had no oil, they would not have sufficient oil for themselves. So this visible representation, I think, helps me to see, number one, what a lamp looks like, not very big, and number two, what they would carry the oil in. Now, do you remember when the Israelites marched around the city of Jericho? What did the priests do on the last day? This is a shofar. This is a trumpet. It's made out of a ram's horn. Now, when I think of a trumpet, I think of Louis Armstrong, you know. No. Now, they had some silver trumpets much later. But when you read about trumpets or horns in the Old Testament, this would more than likely be the kind of horn that you would be reading about. And it's a literal horn. It came off of an ibex or a goat. And I'm sorry, I thought that I had brought some papyrus with me. Now, I do have some salt from the Dead Sea. I would not advise you to lick it. It's nasty. But my wife loves the stuff from the Dead Sea because guess what they make out of all the minerals that come out of the Dead Sea? Cosmetics, lotions, creams, and they have magical qualities to them. And so all the women go and they buy all this foot cream and hand cream that come from the Dead Sea, expecting it's going to rejuvenate them. More than likely, Avon will do about the same. Okay. Well, that's it for this morning. Thank you very much for coming. If you'd like to come up and look at some of this stuff, you're free to do so. If you want to ask some questions to me later, that'll be fine too. I'll probably